Today's episode of Hot Grease has been brought to you by Fairway Market. For more, visit fairwaymarket.com.
You're listening to the Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live to the cosmos from the backyard at Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn.
Welcome to Hot Grease. I'm your host, Nicole Taylor. This Heritage Radio Network program is brought to you by Fairway Market. Every week on Hot Grease, we bring people back to what's great in food. Culinary traditions, cooking at home, knowing your farmer, or even growing your own food. With my Below the Mason-Dixon charm, I spotlight the culture of the food movement. From chefs to tastemakers to moms on a budget. If you're listening live to Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network, remember, folks, we have a live call-in number. A number here in the studio is 718-497-2128. Today, we'll be talking Oxford Gastronomica and chia seeds. As always, my recap of the current food headlines, or maybe not food headlines, or things that I did or I heard folks talking about last week. So first up, shout out to Next Big Small Brand. On last Tuesday at Brooklyn Academy of Music, small food producers from California, more so San Francisco and New York City, came together and they competed. And the winner of the 2012 Next Big Small Brand, congratulations to Superfoods New York City. Okay, I'll have to admit, it's so crazy. I was like, what is chia? They had these like chia bars and all this chia stuff. And it's like the last two or three weeks, everyone is talking about this new chia product. So they won. And congrats to them. Also, I have to shout out, I was really, really, really rooting for Pie Corps. They're based in Brooklyn. They're a pie company. They have the best savory pies, I would have to say. And so good luck to them for the exposure. Fernando Music, Rooster Group, great job, great event. I look forward to 2013. What else? Last week in food headlines and recap. Oh, my gosh. I think everybody in New York City, or not even in New York City, around the country, or even around the world, was in New York City the past few days at the IACP conference. I think this was like the 30th something?
34th
IACP conference. IACP is the International Association of Culinary Professionals. Earlier today, I was at an event in Harlem at the Red Rooster. Dr. Jessica B. Harris, who hosts a show on Heritage Radio Network, did a lunch, and there were people there literally from all over the country. There was someone from Alaska, San Francisco, and she talked about her book. But last night I was at the James Beard House. Tony Tipton Martin, who is a Austin, Texas based food writer, did a great event with four high school students who are aspiring chefs. And the name of it was a reception for the Jamami Code. Tony Tipton Martin has a website, social media properties titled The Jamami Code. And she had five pieces of art of black women in food who either were cooks or cookbook authors. And it was a really moving event. And I think the most moving part of that were the young people, because they were there cooking at the James Beard House. I think that's totally awesome to see young people. And like two or three of them, it was the first time them ever being on an airplane. So shout out to all the folks all over the city who are doing great work and putting together all these awesome events for IACP. We're going to take a short break, but we're going to talk more about IACP, a cool prize that actually did their second launch this weekend at the Crosby Hotel. So listeners, keep listening. We're going to take a short break and more Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network.
Coming at you, Special K from Austin 2.
Rolling with no DJ doubt. Cut Killer.
Welcome back to Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network. Okay, folks, a $12,000 food and drink short story competition launched last month. How exciting. And I'm honored to have two people who are associated with this prize. Don Sloan, who's the chair or head of Oxford School of Hospitality Management at Oxford Brookes University, and Charles Campion, food writer and restaurant critic and patron of Oxford University. Welcome to Hot Grease, guys.
Good to see you, Nicole.
Hello.
So I have to ask you, first of all, we were talking a little bit about Oxford. Well, I have to tell you this brief story. Earlier, someone asked me who was going to be on the show. I said, I have two guys from Oxford. So the first thing they assumed, me being from Georgia, they thought I was talking about Oxford, Mississippi. I'm like, no, not quite. Oxford, England. So tell me a little bit of history or about Oxford Brookes University, Don.
Well, there are two universities in Oxford. There is one that is slightly older than us, Oxford University, which is about 800 years old.
Right.
And then there's Oxford Brookes University, which is the new kid on the block. We're about 150 years old. And we're an applied university. We, as you said, I'm responsible for the Oxford School of Hospitality Management, which I would say immodestly is the best school of hospitality management in the United Kingdom. And one of the areas of distinction that we have, one of the areas of focus that we have, is on food and cultural studies. And we do that through something called Oxford Gastronomica, which is a specialist centre for the study of food, drink, and their place in different cultures around the world. And yeah, and we're here in New York, as you say, being part of the IACP conference, which we try to get to every year.
So let me ask you more about Oxford Gastronomica. Is it a separate part of the university? Is it a program? And how long has it been around as a part of the School of Hospitality Management?
Okay, well, we launched it in 2007. We had a launch in London, but also a launch in New York at the Oxford, sorry, what was it called? The Savoy restaurant.
Okay,
just
cool.
Off
which Broadway. Is now Back 40 West, the Savoy, mm-hmm. by Peter Hoffman, right?
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. That's it. And for a number of years, we've been trying to reach out not just to an academic audience, but we're involving students, members of the public, broadcasters, media figures, anyone that shares an interest and a passion in improving the nature of our relationship with food and drink. But just in this last year, we've introduced a new master's program. It's a Master of Arts in Food, Wine and Culture. And we offer that between Oxford Brookes University and the Burgundy School of Business in Dijon. So the students actually study predominantly in Oxford, but they spend a significant amount of time in Burgundy, the great wine region of France. So it's quite an exciting program. We've got our first cohort of students on it at the moment. And we're hoping and we suspect that it's going to be a really popular program, and we're looking to increase the number of students on it this coming September.
Exciting. So, Charles, Don just mentioned broadcast and media. You are a food writer and restaurant critic in...
Yes, it's really hard work. I can see that you found it really tough too.
Hey, I'm trying to be like you when I grow up, Charles. So how did you get connected to the program?
Well, I kind of fell into it. Until Gastronomica sort of got going. Mm-hmm. No one took food and drink very seriously in Britain. I mean, you know, there was little in the way of good courses that people could go on. And I firmly believe that the more you can do to stir up a bit of interest and give it a bit of cred, the better it is. And this food writing prize, I mean, you talk to people about the food writing prize and they go, yeah. And they, you go on, yeah. And then you say, and the prize is $12,000. And they go, pardon?
So let me ask you this. So you're a food writer, you're a critic. So the pay, is it as low across the pond as it is here in...
We are mercilessly hard-treated. Nobody is kind to us. Like everyone is horrid.
Because, I mean, $12,000 is a lot compared to, you know, some of my... I don't write that much. I'm trying to write more. But most of my food writer friends are getting like $100, a few hundred dollars. Is it the same?
The whole game of food writing in the UK is quite difficult because the newspapers are all collapsing in on themselves. They're having no fun. And until people will start paying properly for web content... It's gonna be really unpleasant. What's important is that I think that the food writing side of things should be as important to everybody as writing novels or writing anything else.
I agree.
And before Oxford Brookes and Gastronomica stepped in with this Jeremy Mogford Prize, there was nothing that was really glassy. You know, there was a few small prizes, which I'm always happy to win, but the big prize is a really good idea.
So, Don, I need to ask you this. So I'm really excited, like, ooh, how can I attend? So if someone like me that I guess I'm a professional, I don't know what I am. I don't know how to classify myself. But if I wanted to come to the UK and do this MA program, how would I do that? And what if I just want to come for a short period of time? Is there something in place, like an intensive for folks to get some training?
Well, we don't actually have short intensive programs just yet, but that is something we would like to think about. The MA program is 1 year, so starts the end of September and runs right through till the end of August. It's best if your listeners just take a look at our website, which is www.brookes.hospitality.ac.uk. Maybe we could put that on the website.
Yeah, we totally can.
And that's the university website, and it links straight through to the pages that tell you specifically about the MA Food, Wine, and Culture.
So I want to get to take a few more minutes to get more into the prize. Is it open to everyone?
It is. It came about because we've got a very strong interest in food literature, as Charles was saying. Each year we have a presence at the Sunday Times Oxford Literary Festival, which is a huge literary festival in the UK, and we run a series of food and literature related sessions. So this year we had Carlo Petrini of the Slow Food Movement
talking about
his work. Yeah, indeed. We had Donna Leone and Joanne Harris talking about food and fiction. We had a swathe of British food writers talking about different things. And we thought, well, how can we generate even more interest in food literature? And that's where the idea for the prize came along. It's sponsored by Jeremy Mogford. It is the Jeremy Mogford Food and Drink Writing Prize in association with Oxford Gastronomica. To enter, you simply have to email for information at it's hospitality@brookes.ac.uk. We'll give you all the details. But essentially, it's a 2,500-word piece, 2,500 words maximum. It can be a published piece or from those who are yet unpublished. The focus is as broad as you like. It could be a work of fiction, a work of fact, as long as it has food and drink at its core. And the submissions have to be in by the 1st of October this year. And the prize winner will be announced next year at the Sunday Times Literary Festival in March in Oxford.
So are you guys going to be, will the finalists be in the UK during the festival, or do you have an idea of how that's going to go?
Well, the finalists will be invited to Oxford for the Literary Festival. If they can't make it, then it always coincides with the IECP conference.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, we'd be back in the US and we could present it in the US if it's someone from the US that wins.
Very smart.
Yeah.
Very, very smart. So I'm so glad you guys came on the show. I have to ask you some of your favorite spots. You know, so for our listeners who are going over to Oxford, or going to the UK, what would you recommend? I was trying to explain hipster earlier. Do you have a spot that's similar to Roberta's?
I'm a hipster, but it's spreading hips in my case. It's not
very all, it's funny. Not, that's a really, good one.
Really, that way.
What are some of your? You're the restaurant critic, huh?
Yeah. It's for me. Then the best restaurant is always the next one.
This is very true.
Oxford's got some nice places in it, but the real powerhouse of restaurants in the UK is London, and we have 90 different cuisines. Like, so you can have very good Czechoslovakian or Burmese or all sorts of strange things, as well as touching all the regular bases. And one of the areas that seems to have survived the recession we're all struggling through at the moment is the restaurant business, which continues to go from strength to strength. It's hard to pick one. Now,
one of the big trends in the UK is for gastropubs, you know, the traditional British pub, but serving really, really high quality food. Yeah. And actually, we ate in New York in a gastropub owned by a British chef, April Bloomfield at the Spotted Pig.
Of course.
Fantastic.
She's a superstar. Yeah. So, Dawn, one more time, folks who are interested in the writing prize or the MA program at Oxford. Give us the website again and the email.
The website is www.brooks.hospitality.... No, I've got it wrong.
Brooks.ac.uk. That's it. And if they're emailing... Yeah, we'll put it on the website.
If they're emailing, it's simply hospitality@brooks.ac.uk. And Brooks is spelled B-R-O-O-K-E-S.
That's it. Don, Charles, thank you so much for coming. Hot Grease, anytime you're in town, come through. I'd love to have you guys back on the show.
Thank you very much indeed.
Listeners, keep tuning in. We're going to take a short break and come back with stuff about Easter, Passover, gluten-free stuff. Keep listening to Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network.
So many miles yet traveled down this brand new road.
Yes, indeed, it's me, the one you love to believe. The quote of a notable nigga that is possibly achieved. Hard fought on the villain when I rock it up, feeling some argue that my skill is still beyond the belief. I roll the Cali only to smoke the finest weed. Hit the button to lock and barely breathe. I have a moment of silence for it. Did rap it, so I'm down on bending knees. And yep, if you ask him to know, it's still me. The one that rock, cool, you rap, flow harder. I'm begging your pardon when you give. Even this master of mortars, a water beat to keep the G's moving. Who's really selling keys? Cause right now you're on a bargain. I'm not really the smartest, but with these words, I'm a genius. Yo, you gonna believe this? You lyrical beaters who be quoting this thesis. Shit, hits for fame, begging for Jesus. We had the mean and march, you took Barack and believe.
Let's go. I'm new home, new foes, new bros, new hoes. West Coast. So many miles yet traveled down this brand new road.
Yes, I need it.
Thank you.
Welcome back to Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network. In the last past 2 weeks, I've heard the word chia a million times. And on the phone to give us the skinny is Susan O'Brien. She's the author of Gluten-Free Vegan Comfort Food. Susan, welcome to Hot Grease.
Hi, how are you?
So we're going to get straight to it. Please, please help me and help our listeners in what is, am I saying it correctly? Chia seeds?
Yeah, do you remember when at Christmas time or during the holidays there are these little chia pets?
Yes.
That sprout hair, that's grass-like material?
Totally.
Well, those little chia seeds are actually amazing powerhouse food. It is chia. Actually, dates back to the early Aztec days, and was for many years considered like money. It was like gold. It was something that was traded between the Native Americans and South American peoples for food and other things, because it is an amazing superfood. And so today, you know, I don't grow chia seeds on pets anymore. I actually use them in my recipes as egg replacers. And so chia seeds are full of protein, fiber. They aid digestion. They have the right kind of essential omega-3 oil that is so vital for us to prevent heart disease and to help us live healthier lives. So I use it in cooking all the time. I put them in muffins and cakes and pancakes and waffles and you name it. I use them.
So, Susan, you just mentioned a few of the substitutions. You mentioned eggs. Beyond eggs, what are some of the other common substitutions for chia?
Well, you could use them in place of flax seeds. You know, flax seeds are really good for lowering cholesterol, and so are chia seeds due to their makeup with all of the amino acids. And so if I make homemade granola, I will add chia seeds to the other ingredients in the recipe because it adds, as I said, fiber and nutritional value as well as medicinal purposes as well. So I use them in that. I use them in pudding as a thickener if I wanted to make a vanilla coconut cream pudding. Instead of using a gelatin, I would use chia seeds.
So one last question about chia seeds. Where can we find this in our grocery store aisles? Do we need to go to a health food store, or will we find it in a place like Whole Foods or Fairway Market?
You know, it's really interesting that you asked that, because when I first started using chia seeds, they were rather challenging to find. It was really like in Whole Foods Market. But now, today, it's springing up everywhere. People are, as you mentioned, you've heard the word chia so many times this week. People have caught on to the nutritional value of chia seeds. So I buy it at my normal grocery store.
Oh, wow.
But you can get it at any health food store, any Whole Foods Market, any larger grocery store that kind of has a wellness or health-oriented section to it. And you can buy it in bulk, or you can buy it in bag already, bagged up.
Okay. Well, Susan, stay on the line. We're going to take a short break, and we're going to come back and talk more Easter Passover recipes for our gluten-free vegan folks. So
sure, no
stick worries. With us, listeners. We're going to take a short break and come back with more Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network. Welcome back to Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Nicole Taylor. Hot Grease is always produced by Jack Inslee and myself, and engineered today by, we have a new engineer. I have to remember his name. But thank you, new engineer. And today this program is being sponsored by Fairway Markets. Let me give a Southern Girl's hug to Roberta's Restaurant, located at 261 Moore Street in Brooklyn, New York, the location of two sustainable shipping containers known as Heritage Radio Network. Okay, folks, if you're struggling with Passover and Easter sides for your gluten-free vegan friends, no worries. We have the Hot Five. The Hot Five is a rundown of five things on fire in the good food movement: influencers, farmers, celebrities, business owners, and chefs dish on their favorites. Today, Susan O'Brien is giving us the Hot Five. Susan O'Brien's book, her latest book, gives us 125 simple and satisfying recipes, from mac and cheese to chocolate cupcakes, and it's titled Gluten-Free Vegan Comfort Food. Okay, Susan, so you're going to give us 5 gluten-free comfort food suggestions for Passover and Easter.
Well, I can do that quite easily. You know, it's one thing that I would suggest for people that are going to have gluten-free guests for Passover would be a mashed sweet potatoes or yams, which is a wonderful dish. It's a great alternative to mashed potatoes, which tend to be higher on the glycemic index scale than yams, which have more nutritional value. Roasted Brussels sprouts. Sweet potato gratin is another alternative. Curried vegetable stew would be a great thing to serve, as well as portobello mushroom steaks with smothered onions. An idea for Easter, I have several. There could you could serve twice baked pesto potatoes.
So Susan, let's start with the first one. I'm sorry, we were having a little engineering problem. You said something about sweet potato mash, number 5 on our list. What's in the sweet potato mash? Is it just sweet potatoes, and what are some of the gluten-free, well, more so vegan substitutes, because the first thing I'm thinking about is butter. But I'm sure
it's butter. Oh my gosh.
But you're taking out you're putting coconut oil in, huh?
No, there's no butter. It's mostly yams with I put a little orange juice into it, and I also put a little bit of nutmeg and
coconut oil,
a little bit of olive oil, and it's really quite delicious, and it's actually more nutritious for you because yams, because they have orange color, they have more nutritional value. They have beta carotene in them, so they're much better for you than just plain old mashed potatoes with butter and milk.
Okay, so that's number 5 on our Passover Easter version of the Hot 5. So number 4, what do you have as another suggestion on your web, particularly in your new cookbook, your latest cookbook? What other recipe would you suggest that's inside of there?
Well, the sweet potato gratin is another great recipe, again using the sweet potatoes, and that's made with apples, yams and apples and orange juice and a little bit of organic maple syrup, orange zest, nutmeg or cinnamon, and fresh cracked pepper and salt. And those are layered, and then yes, and then you pour the orange juice and maple syrup over the top and bake it in the oven, and it gets nice and caramelized on top. But the flavor of the apple and the yam together is a lovely combination. So that's another one that I would highly recommend.
And number three and number 2. Let me ask you this question before you give me 3 and 2 on the Hot 5 Easter Passover edition. Do you have, I don't have the cookbook in front of me. Do you have any, libations or drinks, in your latest cookbook?
Well, I don't really so much. I cook with wine an awful lot, but I have not. I've made some of the drinks in the book are mostly just health drinks. I do have smoothies and you know, things like that. That would be a detox drink or a homemade cashew milk, things like that that I put in the book. But I haven't made any actual libations for the holidays.
Well, hey, that would be a perfect, you know, even dessert for someone who is, you know, eating gluten-free and happens to be a vegan. I would hands down say that would be a perfect, just a regular libation, something to say cheers to, or dessert, right?
Right. Well, strawberry shortcake. I have a wonderful recipe for strawberry shortcake in the book that absolutely knocks your socks off. It tastes just like regular strawberry shortcake, only a little bit better. than your usual one. So I make wonderful lavender lemon shortbread. That's also a really nice dessert to serve to guests because it's not too heavy. Goes great with a cup of tea, a cup of espresso, or even with a cocktail.
I love it. I feel like you just gave us 3, 2, and 1, Susan. I love your book. I get a ton of gluten-free vegan books, and I will say that you're definitely in one of the category of ones that are great, even for the person that is not, you know, by diet, not dietary restriction, but has a medical issue. People like me, every now and then, I want to go gluten-free and vegan-free, and I put you in the category of a great book, and it's for everyone. So congrats on the new book.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for coming on Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network. For folks who are listening and they want to check out more about Susan O'Brien, her new cookbook is titled Gluten-Free Vegan Comfort Food. Susan, have a glorious holiday or Easter, Passover, or just happy spring, Susan.
Thanks so much, and same to you, and thanks again.
Have a good one.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Listeners, thank you again for listening to Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network. Remember, you can join me here live every Monday at 3:30. Until then, always take the road less traveled.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening. Don't be uptight, shake it off and do what you want. Get funky, funky, but then pull up and hit the club and get the bit the butt the bum. Oh, I know you love because the funky, because I just want.